Fort Greene, Brooklyn. This is View From 202, a New York Red Bulls fan podcast, available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and direct from our website, viewfrom202.com. It's View From 202, episode 26. I'm Britt Bird, joining you on this, September 20th or so. I'm joined by Sam Place and Alex Peaches Chang, as always. How are you guys?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm all right.
I'm good. Fresh off vacation. I was in Cape Cod for the weekend, which is nice.
You do look sunned.
Sunned?
Yeah. I'm going to be real honest. I've had a beer or two. So if I slip over any words, now you know why. There was a post-work drinks
there
for somebody's birth. Yeah, exactly.
One.
You got me. One.
If this was a video podcast, we should put a little counter.
There would be
up.
A counter. Yeah.
Yeah, there would. But there's also other good news, because if any of our listeners who are on Twitter remember, there was a poll a long time ago that we put up that said what was going to happen first. The Red Bulls are going to win MLS Cup, or one of us were going to see Hamilton. And pretty much all of you selected that the Red Bulls were going to win MLS Cup first, which, knowing how pessimistic Red Bulls Metro fans are, was it quite the indictment of our chances of seeing Hamilton. But guess who is seeing Hamilton tomorrow?
It's not going to happen. You just jinxed it.
Nope. It's a host you know and love who's not afraid to step in. All right? So
I'm really kind of confused.
That was a lyric from Hamilton.
All right.
I'm seeing Hamilton
for the
tomorrow.
Common man. All right, yeah. Well, congratulations. That's
a common
exciting.
Man.
I'm really
musical.
I'm rooting for catastrophe to happen.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That means that I think David Diggs is still on the show. I don't know. That means he would perish.
How'd you score tickets?
No, I just said you might perish, Britt.
Julia's mom bought them because she's apparently a Broadway enthusiast and is just on the forums 24/7.
Just somebody Broadway posts, or also like West End and stuff.
Just Broadway.
What does it matter?
Well, okay, like
it's like musical theater in general, or just like specifically Broadway. I think it'd be funnier if it's just specifically Broadway.
Okay,
it might just be the general idea of touring Broadway.
Anyway, somebody posted on the forums or whatever that there were tickets very briefly available, and she bought them. And I'm going tomorrow, so this just means that the Red Bulls are obviously winning MLS Cup afterwards, or maybe it means they're never winning. I don't know. Either way. Good week for me. The New York Red Bulls themselves, they played twice since we last spoke, most recently on Sunday, where they drew in Toronto in the Great White North 3-3 after going up at various points 2-0 and 3-1. So that meant that we had a two-goal lead not once, but two different times, which is something new, right, where we ended up drawing. But I think the highlight of this is Bradley Wright Phillips scores two goals. That brings up to 20 goals on the season. But the first goal was actually an own goal, forced by a Felipe cross, if I believe so, where Danny Royer was in the box. We get the own goal in about the 12th minute. It was soon followed by Bradley very opportunistically taking advantage of our high press to very artfully chip Toronto's goalkeeper. And Bradley was already beginning a celebration before the ball even crossed the line.
Cool guys don't look at explosions.
It's true. This was to be answered by a goal from Toronto, courtesy of Michael Bradley, who slotted in a low cross kind of at the top of the box, roughly area, to the far post right before the half. It was 2-1 at the half. And to defy narratives, the Red Bulls came out after the halftime break, and Bradley Wright Phillips scored another goal.
With another Sasha Kleshin
assist. Another Sasha.
I suppose it depends on what the narratives are, because we also scored in the second half against LA. So I don't know.
Until now, it's been 2-0 and we draw 2-2.
Yeah. So we're up 3-1 and at about the 50-minute mark.
So we're in dangerous new waters.
Because Bradley scored off one of those plays that just makes soccer look incredibly easy. Alex Mule had the ball. He shuffled it over to Sasha in the center, who promptly shuffled it over to Bradley on the left side of the box and just went far post. Makes you wonder, why don't we just do that all the time? I think you have to give some sort of mention to Toronto's defensive shape or lack thereof. Not very good. But then, of course, Jozy Altidore eventually scores on a free kick from about 30 yards out, maybe 28, 27, where credit to Josie, it was a good free kick. Kind of a weak foul leading up to it, but, you know, as we've discussed previously, you can never rely on the refs to bail you out. You just got to do a better job.
That's just your opinion.
Yeah, I suppose so, but I'm the one speaking, so.
That's all that matters.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And then in the, what, 86th, 87th minute, the long-awaited equalizer came where it wasn't exactly rocket science. Michael Bradley passed into Jose Altidore at the top of the box, and he just turned. The ball kind of bounced off of Aurelien and Colin, and then Josie hit the ball, and it bounced what felt like 20 times, and at 2 miles per hour, past Luis Robles into the goal. And after a couple of minutes of stoppage time, it ended 3-3. Another away point for the New York Red Bulls, which against league leading or Eastern Conference leading TFC is on its face not a bad result, but yet another instance of a two goal squandering away from home in the second half. What do you guys think about this one?
Why don't you start, Peaches?
I don't feel as strongly as a lot of people do about this game. You know, the internet's been very, I don't know, salty about this game. Yeah. Just in general about how we're going. People are calling for Jesse's head, which is okay, totally unnecessary.
Let's consider that as noise or trolls and ignore them.
Well, there, so was, say that's, well, there was enough instances where it's like a trend.
What? Two,
of people overreacting.
Three times.
Okay, before we get to that, but you're just analysis period, or your take before we get
yes,
to that.
Yeah. I thought the game was... I think it's an okay result. I mean, if we're going up against a good team. Of course, they didn't have Juvenko, but they're top in the East. We get a point on the road against them. If we scored a late equalizer, we'd think it's a win.
Yeah. I mean... Yes, I agree, but we could say that about a lot of these.
Sure. I mean, this could be an instance where don't watch the game and just see the score and maybe it's fine. But
yeah.
I did the opposite. I watched the first 80 minutes and then had a panic attack and didn't watch the next 9 minutes. And then I watched from the 90th.
So you did the worst possible thing.
No, I don't even. I stepped away from the computer just for a little bit. And I went and played with my little brother, 8 years old. He was showing me something on Minecraft, so I was watching that. And then when I came back, I was just like, I was texting somebody. And I was like, "Oh, like it'd be so fucking typical if Toronto scored and the Red Bulls gave up their lead." Lo and behold, they did.
So you're saying that we can blame you for turning the game off?
Yeah, just like you could blame me for the DC thing.
I blame Ted, actually.
Yeah, I think so. Ted's my younger brother. He's 8.
Ted's the worst.
I would say it's his fault.
Yeah,
but I don't think he knows any better. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt this time. But I guess overall thoughts for the game. I was confused with Jesse's substitutions. I was surprised that Grella came on for Royer. The commentators, I don't know who the sideline commentator for Fox is. I don't know her name.
Julie Stewart-Binks.
But she mentioned that she talked to Jesse and then overheard somebody else say that this was more of a defensive tactic to get Grella on. And that just surprises me because Grella is not a defensive player by any means. And if anything, I thought Royer had a very good defensive game. So I was very surprised with that substitution.
Grella was, I think, a better defensive player earlier in the year.
Okay, but right now, I think the clear choice would be to have Royer, even 60 minutes on. And I thought he had a very good game offensively, too, and I just don't think Grella is in that form where he would have made a really meaningful contribution. So that was one problem I had. And then I also had a problem with putting Zizou on for Mule. I just thought that was a very weird choice. Honestly, in my opinion, I probably would have liked to see Dax in for Sasha instead of Dax in for Davis. I didn't think Davis had a great game, but I think, Britt, you mentioned this last game against DC, but Sasha kind of stopped running after like the 70th minute, and I think the same thing happened here. He just, you know, it was like a very sad like toe poke out to get a ball at some point, and he just missed it and then just stopped. And I think it was a lot of that. I mean, he was still creating chances late into the game, but I think that we needed to, if we wanted to make a substitution in the midfield, I think Dax would be the right answer.
That did occur to me as well.
Yeah. And I guess one more thing. I just think that I would have liked. I mean, this is just kind of it's misfortune because of Dax's fitness right now or his injury status. But I really would have liked him to really start ahead of Davis. Because I think in a lot of defensive situations, he would have stepped up in ways that Davis did not. And I think that the most notable example for me is the goal that he that Bradley scored, the first Toronto goal. I think Davis just did a poor job tracking back, and it's a situation where I think Dax really would have done a much better job defensively and tidied up on that play. And that really would have changed the momentum. If Toronto didn't score in the first half, I think that, I mean, going up 3-0, it'd be a very different game.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there.
Sorry to ramble.
No, that's good. I think I like that Jesse is loyal. I mean, within his own limits. Jesse's also said previously, I guess it's fair to describe him as loyal because I'm thinking of last year when
he didn't change
when Grella won his spot and then we signed Verone as a DP midseason. He came out and said very explicitly, like, look, if you're in the spot, you're in the spot. I'm not automatically giving it to a new signing. And I like that. I think everyone liked that. It was a good move. However, his loyalty right now with Grella, I think, is drawing more questions every week.
It's easier to be loyal or to really show loyalty when you're top of the league and winning the Shield.
Yeah.
It's much harder to really defend that.
When we're still second in the East, though. It's not like we're in a bad position.
Sure, but Grella looks... has looked off for a while now, and I think it's just beyond goals and assists, which have also dried up. But his ability to kind of like get in between and slip in between spaces and contribute to the press in his own way. Peaches, you mentioned just a second ago that Grella was actually a better defensive player early at the beginning of the season. Yeah. I think I agree. It wasn't in the kind of way that Alex Mule is, where Alex Mule is kind of like a bulldog of sorts. He really goes after it. Grella is sneakier a little bit, I think, and is more deceptive in his
pressing. Grella ran a lot more too, though. He also covered a lot more ground earlier in the season than
usual. But I think he's out of form, and it was a strange substitution to do as a defensive move. I think taking out Royer was perhaps understandable to a certain extent in that we're trying to ease him in and not trying to give him too many minutes right off the bat. But for Grella, I think, was strange. I'm actually more okay with the Zizzo move, actually. I thought Zizzo was fine. I like that Jesse is kind of returning him to maybe more of a winger role. That shows a little bit of flexibility from Jesse that I was worried was no longer there.
He kind of played as a wing back.
I think in this situation, I think it's different. I think in the DC game, I really liked how Zizzo was used. I think that sort of substitution, putting him up as a real winger, actually was good because he had a few good chances. But it felt like in this game, he actually played a more defensive role. He played alongside Duvall towards the end.
Yeah, well, I will say that he is definitely not the reason why we conceded, though.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, Jesse kind of, I think, anticipated some of the heat he might get about five at the back, and he said the reason that we did it was to limit the amount of crosses they're getting from the outside, from the wings, and he was really worried about that.
Because they went three in the back, and we were getting overwhelmed.
Well, we successfully did that. That change did successfully cut down on the amount of crosses coming in from the sides. So from a tactics perspective, that worked. The reason we conceded those goals, I think, in my opinion, was execution. Now, if you look at that third goal in particular, you see Michael Bradley collect a second ball, I think, more or less, and then kind of just outrun the rest of our midfield and slot it into Josie, who's simply at the top of the box, a very direct, simple pass right to the bottom of his feet, who perhaps gets a bit lucky, but outmuscles Colin, and then we don't have another guy to, double Josie right there. It's all kind of born out of the fact that Perrinel kind of made
a step up,
a bad step earlier. It didn't directly cost us, but it made it so he wasn't quite in position. And then, in my opinion, Luis Robles is extremely slow to get to his near post at the end. None of that screams tactical failure to me. So I think people talking about five at the back once again are slightly beside the point. And I don't think pointing at Zizzo, I think is just making a scapegoat.
Yeah, it felt like we actually looked a lot better defensively on our right side. We shut down a lot of their movement on Toronto's left. I thought a lot of their crosses and a lot of their possession was with Endo on the right. I think that was really where we had problems in the last 20, 25 minutes.
And I mean, I think Jesse is trying to solve this issue of us conceding late, right? That's what we're doing with his defensive subs. What he's trying to instill is that we have to hold the lead somehow. I think Matt Doyle said that the best way we've done that at home this season is by just maintaining possession.
Yeah. Scoring again.
No, not even by scoring, just by killing the game through possession without letting the other team get to the ball. Well, I think we're failing on that front.
I agree. And I think that's why I'm prone to agree that it would have been nice to see Dax in for Sasha instead, because we didn't necessarily need to be making those final passes, but we did need to keep that energy in midfield. And Sasha was the most readily, his fatigue was the most readily apparent out of all of them. Mm-hmm. I think Sean Davis still has a little bit left in the tank from not playing all the beginning of the season.
But I will give credit to Jesse that he's trying to solve this problem with defensive subs, right?
Yeah. I mean, as I said earlier, I don't think it's a tactical failure on his part. I think it's an execution on the players in particular.
I think it's a bit of both. I think it's more so execution towards the end especially, but I think a little bit can be attributed to Jesse. I mean, I've never doubted that he's acutely aware of this, our failure of maintaining two goal leads on the road. I think that's pretty, he's very well aware. I think he's reviewed so much footage on it and tried to come up with a solution. So I've never doubted that at any point. It's very frustrating after it happens. Yeah. I mean, 12 games unbeaten is great, and second in the East is also
still control our own destiny.
It's also technically still in the Shield race.
Well, okay, that's beside the point.
I think we're kind of giving up on the Shield if we can't win these games on the road, and that's fine. As long as if we fix this issue in some capacity, maybe instead of giving up two goals, you just give up one goal in the last 30 minutes, that's great. That momentum would bring us into a really good playoff run.
If we had these 4 points after these last 2 weeks, we could have maybe talked about the Shield, maybe, but still not likely, but not right now. I think that the team definitely, I hope they have, and if they haven't already, they need to hire a sports psychologist, I think. I know this is something that teams in all sports kind of do, and it's not actually beyond the budget of an MLS team either. The Montreal Impact had an entire episode of Extra Time Radio preseason talking about how their sports psychology was a very critical part of their off-season training.
Well, something's not working for them right now, so I don't know how useful that was.
Well, sure. I mean,
Well, their mentality might be very
good.
Point
being, though,
maybe they're just very
MLS,
happy.
MLS, Montreal's not a fantastically wealthy team. I mean, Saputo definitely splashes cash when he wants to, but they're not NYCFC or the Galaxy or Toronto, where it's, I think, within our overhead to spend off the field, to use that off the field expense and buying a sports psychologist. We at least need to get a couple hours with our back four and like Robles or something, because it's mental, it's execution here. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily tactics. So let's zero in a little bit on Goat and Woat for Toronto. 3-3 against Toronto.
I'm going to go easily with Bradley just because he scored.
Yeah.
Golden boot.
Yeah, I think I've given it to him like 3 times. This will be my 3rd time in a row giving it to Bradley. I think he had a great game. I would have really liked to see him finish a couple more chances, but with 2 goals, that's great. And he's in form. Well, I mean, no, it's not that I'm asking for, I'm asking for a little more. I'm asking for 3 or 4 of those, but the fact that he's finding the back of the net is great. And that's keeping us in games and giving us leads. And very, very pleased.
Also shout out to Chris Duval. I thought
Duval's doing well as well. I think it's Bradley for me as well. Easy call. Can't give it to anyone else. The guy's a one-man machine. People are making noise about how he's kind of not getting enough respect, especially since the MLS punditry class was going on and on about Josie this last week, even though Bradley has, twice as many goals? And
Josie has 8, I think.
So Bradley has more than twice as many goals. But you know what? I kind of don't mind that, because I think this team is better when it's disrespected.
Should we start buying or something at our goddesses?
No. I don't know. I don't know. No, we'll think about it later.
Who's your woat? I think I already
you
know.
You guys already know who my woat is. I'll say that. Okay. Luis Robles gets a lot of credit and a lot of love because he was the answer and salvation after the days of Frank Rost and Bunakan Duel, which were ugly days. So he gets a lot of deserved love. However, that does not mean he's infallible. I think that Luis Robles gets a cult-like treatment from a lot of fans that makes them unwilling to criticize certain things. I'm worried that Robles' lateral movement seems lacking to me. A lot of these late goals seem to be beating him at his near post, low on the ground, with not a lot of pace. I think that this one in particular, there was talk of the ring deflection, but I think that the near post was really the only post that Josie could have shot to anyway. It bounced several times. It didn't look like Luis got that wrong-footed incredibly, and even so, he didn't have that much distance. I'm also worried that this injury, this slight niggling injury, is limiting his lateral movement, at which point we really start have to asking whether we're weighing this record of consecutive starts more than the actual performance on the field. So my vote for this week is Luis Robles.
I think that conspiracy theory, especially with the whole Clinton health
thing. Look, it's not a conspiracy theory. And like Luis even said it on his appearance of Seeing Red last week. He anticipated it. But I think that goes to show that there's slight cause for wondering about his performance. I don't think it's an intentional conspiracy. No. I think we have a lot of deserved reverence for his performance over the last 4 years. However, if he's legitimately not 100%, we're already in the playoffs. It's time to think about giving him 10 to 14 days of rest if it's going to make him better, and give Mara one stop. Because look, if we can't get a top two seed with Mara in the post, you know, if that's the difference, then hell, this team doesn't deserve it anyway. I think we need to really have an honest discussion with him about what his health is right now and get him up to speed for the last playoff push.
Yeah, I thought that, honestly, I don't think he should have played over the midweek game. I think he should have rested. I think he's beat up. I think I really
don't think he would have played in the midweek game if he's not 100%, though.
Okay.
I don't know. I think he would have.
I think this season has taken more of a physical toll on him than last season. I think he's put his body on the line a lot, and I really appreciate him for doing that, and appreciate, you know, his... a lot of the plays that put him in dangerous positions, but that obviously comes at a price, and that is, you know, I think is his sharpness, and I think it causes small injuries here and there, and I think that wasn't the case last year, and I think that let him really, you know, have the season that allowed him to be goalkeeper of the year. I don't think that's the case. I mean, he's not goalkeeper of the year this year. I think he looks a little bit, doesn't look as sharp. I still think he looks good. I still think he does play well. I wouldn't put any more blame on him for our inability to maintain leads than any other player. I would probably put a little less on him than maybe our center backs. Or Kamar Lawrence or anybody else, but I do agree that I think he didn't have a very good game. I guess my vote for me though, I'm gonna give it to Kamar Lawrence. I thought that when we invited pressure, some of it was up the middle with Bradley and Altidore, but I think that Endo just dominated Kamar on the right side towards the end of the second half, which allowed for a lot of crosses, prompted the Zizzo substitution. And that solved our right side, but didn't really fix our left side. I also think he got dispossessed a couple times in our defensive third in the first half, which allowed to a couple chances where Toronto really should have scored. And I think one of them most vividly was when Duval really kind of bailed him out. I think it was like he made a sliding tackle, a stop across the 6 yard box, and he cleared a ball out. And I think that was great of Duval, but that really kind of was created. That problem was really started with Kamar. So I'm going to give it to Kamar Lawrence this time.
I thought it was Sean Davis. I think the first goal is Sean Davis' fault. I don't think he provided as much cover as we needed him to cover. I thought there was a good reason he was subbed off. Not his sharpest game.
All right, so the GOAT is a unanimous GOAT for Bradley, and we got votes for Luis Robles, Kamar, and Sean Davis. All right, there was another game this week that we're going to talk about in this first segment. It was a slightly better result at home against Antigua. Nope, I'm sorry, Alianza, other A team.
All CONCACAF teams.
All A teams are the same to you, Bruce. It's true, yeah. Where we won 1-0 at the death, Saucer Clustron as a super sub scored 90th minute winner against Alianza to basically put us through to the knockout rounds of the CCL. It was a welcome return, or a welcome reversal, rather, to a conceding late equalizers where we actually won a late winner. This was a game with a pretty strong lineup. Luis Robles, as we've said, started. Sasha did not start, but we had Sean Davis, I think, started. We had
Felipe at number
Felipe 10. Was number 10.
Tyler Adams.
Colin got 70 minutes. We had a lot of first-team talent out there. It was not our fully bold B team. And we pull out the win at the death.
Mm-hmm.
There was slight rumor that, or it's more than rumor, there are reports that because of a dispute between the Guatemalan Football Association and FIFA, all Guatemalan teams, which would be Antigua, the other team in the group, were going to be potentially disqualified from inter-federation tournaments or larger international tournaments, which would include CCL, which would in effect mean that our group play would essentially be a home and away tie between Alianza, which we would have now won because we won 1-0 at home and drew 1-1 away. However, we will not know the resolution of this conflict and or this dispute until October 1st. So the team will be going back down to Guatemala for the final game of this group stage, no matter what. We have not technically qualified, but you have to imagine that with our comfortable lead and the amount of extenuating circumstances that Antigua needs to move on, that we're probably going to send a pretty thoroughly B squad to this game. So, 1-0 after 90 minutes at home against Alianza at a smaller crowd in Rebel Arena, and we are almost certainly onto the knockout stages of CCL. How do you feel about this game? Peaches, you can start.
It was an ugly game.
Yeah.
I think Jesse said at the half that we didn't really look very good, and I'd agree with him after the first, 15 minutes or so when we couldn't sink our chances. I mean, it was nice to be able to see that Verón can do what he can do.
It's nice to see him get 90 minutes. I believe that's the first time he's ever got 90 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's his first game where he got 90 minutes. And the amount of separation that he can create with the amount of time that he makes that separation is amazing to see. That's what created our goal in the end, and I am, you know how disappointed I am that we don't see more of Verón.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's one thing we didn't really talk too much about against Toronto. I would have liked to see more Verón, obviously.
Yeah, he's an attacking substitution, though, not a defensive one.
I guess in the Toronto situation, I just would have liked to see Verón start and then Mule come in as a sub, because I think Mule provides that defensive pressing energy that we kind of lack towards the final third.
Yeah, but I don't think Verón's a winger. I really don't. He played as a lone striker against the CCL, and I think he's impressed far more when he's playing striker.
I'll challenge that.
Yeah, I will too.
I think he was technically a striker in the CCL game, but his most productive moments were when he are on the wings.
Yep.
That's where the assist came from, and that's where he seemed most comfortable. He constantly drifted a little bit to the left. He seems, oddly enough, more comfortable receiving the ball on the right when we're in our own half. He's had a couple of really great runs. He had another really great run this game from the right, but he inevitably drifts leftward. So I think to a certain point, the question of position might be a little bit redundant or beyond our definitions, but I think he is very effective on the wing as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, he also played on the wing against, was it DC, right?
Yeah.
And I think he had a very good game there too.
I thought he could have looked better, but yeah.
So I'll give credit to Jesse here for putting on Sasha and saving him for those last 15 minutes. Lord knows it worked perfectly. Let's skip to Goat and Woat because of our limited time here on this first segment.
Verón, Goat.
Yeah, same.
But
I will give an honorable mention. I think Robles actually had a pretty good game. If it was at the expense of the TFC game, that's a shame. But he did have a couple good saves. So
I will give one to even though we played about an hour, I'll say Tyler Adams looked like a player who could fit at the professional level. There are several other of the youngsters who got pulled up who looked a little bit more like youngsters.
Speaking of my wotists,
well, yeah, hold on. But Tyler Adams, I think, looked the part and was kind of directing things in the middle of the field but in a way that impressed me. Your woe is speeches.
Aaron Long.
Yeah.
I didn't think he looked very good either, but, I mean, to be fair, I wasn't at the game, so I only watched a very abridged version of the game.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with Aaron Long. Unfortunately, I don't know if the guy's going to make it. which reminds me of our discussion last week about who our center backs are going to be in a couple years.
I thought he just had a bad game. I mean, I don't know.
He looked kind of fundamentally outmuscled. Like number nine, the striker for Alianza, number nine is
they're pressing him hard.
He's a small guy though. He's a small guy. And Aaron Long, Aaron Long was kind of over relying on his physicality. Yet number nine was able to repeatedly get a little bit of separation on him, where Long was kind of towering over him or getting like almost a 90 degree angle over him, in a kind of more desperate fashion, where I think a more seasoned center back is able to get a stronger foundation and really kind of manipulate the guy. So I'm less confident about the prospect of Aaron Long kind of fitting in our back line.
Well, he's on the first team now.
He has been loaned back, or signed rather, up to the first team for the rest of this game.
He's a young guy, 20. I guess young is relative, but he's 23. He's got 8+ years as a center back to grow and continue to develop. And I think that I would not judge his future off of a single performance, but I don't think it was a good one.
He's one of those guys who's on the USL team who is not a homegrown, and it's a little bit less clear what his future is, I think, because it's a question of how much is he a body to fill out that team, you know? I don't think there's as much of a cohesive plan or coherent plan for his future like we might have with some of the academy kids. So we'll have to see. However, I'll give credit to him that, you know, we didn't concede. He did not have a critical error. So good news from CCL, mediocre news from Toronto. We're going to take all of this and move forward in segment two, where, as always, we're going to look toward the future. Looking towards Montreal this weekend and doing a little bit of scoreboard watching. Join us after the break for that. Thanks.
Jimmy's in the back with a pocket of heart. If you listen close, you can hear him cry. Oh, Lord, heaven knows we belong way down below. Sing it.
Oh, Lord, heaven knows we belong way down below. Sing it out.
Back to segment two of View from 202, episode 26. We're going to start with a slight summary of the current table as it stands in the Eastern Conference. The New York Red Bulls are in second place with 45 points after 30 games played. They have 12 wins, 9 losses, and 9 draws. As we all know, we are on a 12-game unbeaten streak. I will review only one, I believe, five, maybe six of those games. The only team above us is our foe from the last weekend, Toronto FC, with 47 points and a game in hand. Below us is NYCFC with 45 points, the same amount as the Red Bulls. But we are ahead of them on a goal differential of seven. Apropos of
love it. God, that's perfect.
After these top three teams, though, it's when you start to see some separation in the playoff field. Philadelphia has 41 points after 30 games. Montreal is 38 with 29 games played. And New England is actually occupying the very last playoff spot with 36 points in 30 games played. So we now have a scenario where there's kind of three different tiers battling it out for playoff spots. The Red Bulls, Toronto FC, and NYCFC are kind of battling out for those top two spots, which of course get you that first round bye in the playoffs. Philadelphia and Montreal are kind of battling it out to get that third and fourth spots, and as well as whoever gets third amongst that previously mentioned group, so that they could host a potential wild card game. And then we have New England, DC United, and Orlando, who are really the main three competitors for that last and sixth final playoff spot. Columbus and Chicago are both not technically out of it. It's been a couple weeks now where you're looking at the scoreboard and you're saying, man, if Chicago or Columbus could go on a run and just get, you know, two or three wins in a row here, they might be in it. However, it's never quite happened. Chicago got a draw last week, I believe. Although Columbus did get a win over Orlando, who squandered an opportunity. All this to say, though, the Rebels are still in a solid spot. They could have qualified for playoffs officially this last weekend with a win in Toronto. It turns out that Toronto actually has not technically qualified for the playoffs already. After Taylor Twellman did his due diligence on Twitter today and pointed out that it is still possible for them to finish seventh. However, this is all academic. The Red Bulls and Toronto, of course, are both going to make the playoffs. Can't imagine any other scenario. I will pause now.
There is a scenario where Toronto doesn't make the playoffs.
I just said that.
Yeah.
But I will pause and say that after many years of many different playoff scenarios or setups, I think I'm actually quite pleased with this. I mean, I think we all remember, or we all are aware of, if we don't remember, you know, how the Red Bulls were actually Western Conference champions in 2008 due to, like, the whole conference switching thing that would happen with the playoff, with the wild card spots.
I still think we should get a banner for that.
The Colorado Rapids similarly won MLS Cup while technically coming from the Eastern Conference. There's been a lot of weird, different little playoff structures not too long ago in MLS, even in MLS 2.0. But now I think they've actually figured out a system that works quite well that gives a good amount of meaning to the regular season. The Supporters' Shield seems to be getting a little bit more respect every season that we go on. But now we've got a scenario where you actually kind of have a tiered system that's a little bit similar to what single table acolytes really clamor for, and that you have this top two that kind of, I think, simulates the fight for a top of the league that you might have in European systems, where the automatic CCL position kind of simulates that goal as well. Then you have these spots for the fight for these 3 and 4 spots, which kind of simulates qualification for the Champions League that you see in the top leagues in Europe as well. And then you have the fight for the 5th and 6th spots, which I think simulates Europa League qualification a little bit. And then and kind of like the last gasp little bit of qualifying, that it's not totally like relegation, but you kind of have that desperation to it as well. I mean, there's at the bottom of the table, of course, we don't have relegation, we don't have Pro-L, we're not going to anytime soon, so that's beside the point. I just want to say, I think MLS has figured out a good playoff system right now. The only problem is that perhaps too many teams make it, but this will hopefully even out and solve itself as we add more teams in the next couple years.
Yeah, I think it's weird when there's more teams in the playoffs. More than half the teams get into the playoffs. That's always going to be a little odd to me. But we're adding two more teams this year, and then
yeah.
I think there's going to be, what, two more after that in the next two years. So we'll be at a point where it'll be even. You know, yeah. 6 teams in, 6 teams out on each division. I don't mind that at all.
Come on, Las Vegas.
Yeah, that's fine by me.
I disagree, but that's a different subject.
Yeah. I think what's interesting is you were talking about this kind of tiered setting we have right now. I mean, I want to go back more to the Eastern Conference because that's what I've been following more.
Yeah.
I mean, I watch Western Conference games when I can, but I don't really know who's doing well and who's not. I knew Seattle used to be a thing, but now kind of suck again. So that's good.
Seattle never sucked.
Yeah, they have.
Yeah, they did. Are you kidding me? Did you not
watch? Oh, no. This season. I thought you meant like overall.
Yeah. Like this season, like they were a mess until
Either way, beside the point,
whatever. But I think there are a couple. I don't know. Look, it seems to be a couple of trends that I feel like I've been noticing amongst teams, and that's you mentioned that nearly the first tier is what NYCFC, TFC, and Red Bulls. Mm-hmm. I think that the Red Bulls are in the best form because they just are not losing games. But I also think TFC is in good form, especially considering they don't have Juvinko, or they haven't for the last 4 games.
And they have games in hand.
They have 1 game in hand. They also are without their top keeper, who's Irwin, right? Their best keeper.
Yeah, but he should be healthy.
He'll be back, but he's been out for a long time, and I think that they've been doing pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah, and Irwin's been playing with TFC too.
Yeah, but I mean, the fact that he's not in the first roster. Yeah. Is my point. And I think NYCFC is playing very mediocre.
As they always have.
So it'll be very interesting to see how they play against Chicago, who's starting to look a little better. They I don't know who they signed. Delu,
playing well.
Delu's scored, I think, in the last three games. He looks good.
Akam is great.
He's great when he's on the field. I think he was on an international duty or something like that. So that'll be interesting. But I think that New England looks really good right now, and Montreal look really bad right now. Especially in the last few games, I just think Montreal looked
You have to start worrying
like
about
crap.
Montreal making playoffs.
Because there was a point where they had like two games in hand on everybody, and then three games on a few people, on a few teams, and it looked like if, you know, if they won these three, they'd be top of the league, they'd be top of the East, and they just, they've really not executed. They look really terrible. They looked really poor. I watched the second half of the New England Montreal game, and Kai Kamara was playing. We think we were saying that Kamara, when he's out, when he's off the field, New England looked like a much better team. But it's really funny that this just reminds me of what happened 2 years ago, where New England got hot at the end of the season. They kind of squeaked into the playoffs. Not much of a concern to us during the regular season, but then they make this run all the way to the MLS Cup to lose to the Galaxy. But
swear to God.
But you know, we talk about these trends and being streaky at the right times, and right now the two teams that I think look the best, I mean, just based on records and current form, are Red Bulls and New England. It'd be kind of a shame if New England squeaks into that sixth place spot.
Personally, maybe this year we can lose to Los Angeles.
Personally, I would I'd like to see Orlando sneak in. However, they completely blew it over the last weekend, so you know, I'm not investing any particular emotions in them trying to make it. But yeah, looking at the top of the table, you would like to think that there's no reason that Toronto and us can't finish top. I think NYCFC's somewhat luckier win against DC, or DC be totally imploding, kind of obscured a little bit of their more consistently mediocre form. Villa has not scored for a while. Lampard's now out for, I think, 4 to 6 weeks.
4 weeks. 4 weeks with the calf.
4 to 6, I think. Yeah, same injury he had previously. Pirlo's not getting any younger. so you would have to think that we can take advantage of that. However, they have a very easy schedule. And, you know, we're currently above them on goal differential. So if they were to win out, we need to win out and then some, really.
I think the interesting games, in my opinion, are the Philadelphia games. You mentioned that Philadelphia is really kind of a tier below us, but I think that they're only 4 points behind. And if they beat us in both those games, then they're right up there. So I think it really is. It's early. But
I'm just saying, even two of those points would have been from the last 2 weeks.
Yeah,
it would have just been so nice.
Yeah, exactly.
But either way, I think wandering over to the Western Conference now, I just think, man, this league, I think, would be really nice for this league to have the FC Dallas Red Bulls MLS Cup. And I say this, and I'm from Houston. I do not like Dallas. However, I think FC Dallas has kind of been just divorced from the city of Dallas for me. It's just like more of a soccer team only, since they don't even have that many fans. They're just like a really good soccer team, and that's it. But man, FC Dallas versus Red Bulls, they've already won the US Open Cup. I think it's just like the final we would deserve. Of course, we're not going to get that. It's just not going to happen. But I that is my desire. It would have been great last year. That'd be even better this year.
If we were spoiling their treble.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, I think it would feel like one of the more consequential MLS Cups in recent history.
Yeah.
Because New England versus LA, okay, yeah, they're pretty good. New England, though, streaky. I don't know. The entire Eastern Conference that year was a bit off. Last year, Portland versus Columbus, I think all of us are already forgetting that cup. It kind of feels like a one-off.
Yeah, I told you that I forgot Portland won the MLS Cup.
Yeah, who was 2013? That was SKC, yeah?
Yeah.
Over RSL, I think that's a little bit more of a legit one. But then you've got the two Galaxy ones before that over the Dynamo, who kind of made, you know, if I'm being honest, like a little bit more streaky runs in a classic Dynamo fashion. We often forget the 2011 Galaxy were not that great of a team either. They kind of skated through as well. My point is that we haven't had a fantastic MLS Cup really in recent years as far as regular season teams making it since, I'd say, 2013. I would love to see that this year, and I think the best chance for that would be us and Dallas, or Toronto and Dallas.
But if it was us and Dallas, we wouldn't be able to host.
That's true. A good point. Yeah, well, I think for the sake of the league, I don't want Dallas to be the host of the MLS Cup. I don't think they would even sell us.
But they still tarp off that entire section under construction.
God, behind
the goal,
man. Like they would sell you know, MLS you know, Cup. Like our stadium, our attendance is not great, and I think we're all well aware of that. We've never said anything else to the contrary, but like, man, Dallas and Houston, like. That
well, Houston's very, yikes. Very bad this year, and bad teams in all leagues drop poorly.
Do you think Garber's drawing up some way to get us and NYCFC into the final of the West?
Can we go back to the Western Conference? I think a really good matchup, like a good game to watch. You're right. I think it would be Dallas Red Bull. I think that
would be the purest perspective. That would be a nightmare for the general audience person. Like, Lord knows Garber wants NYCFC versus Galaxy right now.
Yeah,
it was the same way with Galaxy and us when we had Henri, and that never happened. Yeah. So, you know,
I'd be okay with Colorado making it. I like how they play. I think Tim Howard brings also like a pretty good marketing element to that. Yeah. As long as it's not at Dick's Sporting Goods Arena, then I'm happy. But I don't. Yeah. That's not really a guarantee, nor will it really ever be. Yeah. But I wouldn't mind that, or really. I guess Galaxy either.
Yeah. And hey, needless to say, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's just the Western Conference. I guess
Let's go back to our speaking of projected results and scoreboard watching. Let's go back to our projected points targets. So we had set up before this game a single point, a draw in Toronto as a admirable goal. To get, and we did in fact achieve that, which means we've held steady with our projection, which means that we now are at -3 on our projection from back in week 19.
53.
Which leads us to 53 points on the season. If you recall, the places that we dropped points were away to Chicago, at home to DC, and away to DC. And now away to Toronto. We picked up a point in away to LA Galaxy where we drew instead of lost. And 2 points in Vancouver instead of drawing. So if we win in Montreal, win at home to Philadelphia, draw at home to Columbus, and draw away to Philadelphia, will finish with 53 points.
But if we win all of them, we'll finish with 57.
I think that there's realistically we're going to win 3 and draw 1, or we're going to
lose all of them.
It depends on how things go against Montreal, which I guess.
So let's talk about Montreal. Montreal is a team that, as you've said, Sam, is reeling, not playing well. Drogba looks older by the week. The defense is not holding up well at all. They've failed to take advantage of any of their games in hand, which feels like a perennial theme with Montreal, unfortunately.
That's kind of how it was last year too. Because of their deep CCL run, right? And then there was a situation where they had six postponed games, 4 games in hand towards the end of the season, and everyone thought, oh well, then maybe they could actually make a run to the top, and I think they finished third or fourth, right?
Their last 3 results are a loss at home to New England 3-1, New England, who was not in the playoff spot before this game, a draw away to Philadelphia 1-1, which is a decent result, I suppose, and then losing at home to Orlando 4-1, Orlando, who just got spanked by bottom of the league Columbus this last weekend. So Montreal is not sharp. This is a
wow. I'm looking back in their last 6, 7, 8 games, and they have not scored more than 1 goal.
Yeah,
in the last
it's anemic.
Eight.
It's anemic
That's
for them
crazy.
Right now. So
they're going to destroy us.
This is a litmus test. This is a game that I'm not going to call it a trap game or anything, because I think the fan base's expectation is low, which is perhaps not fair, and that we still haven't lost in 12 games. But we're all very pessimistic, I think, for understandable reasons. But yeah, I think you definitely expect a team out of the a team. You definitely expect a win out of the Red Bulls this weekend against a reeling Montreal team, who we've had a really great record against historically, actually, especially at home.
At home, yeah.
Yeah, they haven't. Well,
I think gonna, they're. I think they're it. Perfect.
I'm not gonna say it. And it was the old knock on wood.
We're just talking. We're talking about the past tense.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to this weekend?
What am I looking forward to? I want to see a full 90 from Royer.
Yeah.
I want to see Verone play too. I was saying before that I think Mule provides a lot of energy, and I think it's I'm not going to say anything different than any other pundit has said at any point in the last month, 2 months. It's just that he provides this energy and great pressing. His technical ability isn't great. I don't know. I very, you know, you talk about loyalty that Jesse has. I guess it's really hard. It's really hard to see him not start Mule, but I would really like to see Verone start and Mule come in the last 30, just to see what it would do to our defense in the second half. I guess depending on the circumstances, but I think we'll continue to see the same players performing well. I think that Sasha will continue to get rest, and we'll see him have more stamina towards the end of the game. I think Bradley will play well. Hopefully our back line sharpens up a bit. Be interesting to see how Colin and Parnell do against Drogba, even though Drogba's not playing very well.
Zubar might be back.
Zubar could be back. That'd be great.
That'll be great.
Because as has been discussed, we have a very strong defensive record when Zubar and Colin are in the back. So I guess we'll see. What are your thoughts, Peaches?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm expecting to, like, have a horrible tragedy at this point in this game. But then again, yeah, I think we should be able to shut out Montreal. I think that should be what we should aim for, to shut Montreal out, regardless of what happens. But, yeah, I mean, we have scored in every single game since we played Portland. Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if we can shore up whatever defensive lapses we have against Montreal, I'm going to feel a little bit better going into this playoff run.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel I have no choice but to be optimistic here.
That's a rookie mistake.
Yeah. You just fucked it up. That's it.
I know. I think Brad, I like what I hear from Bradley right now. Bradley right now is my favorite player on the team right now. I've had a huge crush on Sasha all season, but Bradley is a man on a mission. And the quote that I liked in particular from him last game was that before last game actually said he knows that he is getting lucky right now, and that it's going to dry up, and that he needs to stay focused and work hard every week. And I really like hearing that from them right now, because it shows that he learned from the beginning of the season where he was getting unlucky. And that he knows he's not going to be able to carry this team, or that he's not above it all, and that he's a team player. And I think that helps him not get too upset at his defense, which I think we would not blame him for doing that. So I love where Bradley's at right now. I'm really curious to see how he plays against Montreal's weaker defense. I do think we should be able to put up some goals. I would like to see 90 minutes from Royer. I agree on that front. And I think this is a good game to give Verone a run out as well. I was not upset to not see Verone on Sunday, because he did get a full 90 minutes on last Thursday. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it calmed down the, you know, cries for you know, injustice about Verone. I don't think Sunday was not a non-issue for that. I will be annoyed if Grella gets more playtime right now. I think the other guys in his position have clearly demonstrated a chance to get those 90 minutes.
Free Sean Wright Phillips.
Yeah, I mean, hey, if we're up by a couple goals by the end, I wouldn't mind it. I don't think that's why we're not conceding, because of those kind of subs. That's not the root of the problem. I'll kick off the predictions, and I'll say that I think we will win 3-1 with a Danny Royer goal among them.
Well, Peaches, what about you?
I think we're gonna lose 3-2.
Wow.
Yeah.
Even snapped there.
Yeah, I think it's going to happen. Yeah.
Okay.
Drogba hat trick.
Wow. That, okay. All right. I think that this is going to be our equivalent to last season's New England game where we just like tore shit up and it was awesome. And
the 4-1 game. Yeah. We scored 3 goals in like 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's going to be wild. I think it's going to be the equivalent. I think there's been too many games where we have these shots off the post and these chances that are just barely missed. And, it, you know, it's the difference between Bradley scoring 2 goals and 4 goals. And I feel like today, or like, I feel like this weekend's going to, it's going to, everything's going to balance out. And we're going to win 4-1. And it's going to be really nice and satisfying.
We're giving up a goal. Is it going to be a PK?
No, I feel like Piatti's going to do some shit and just score.
He's on my fantasy team.
He has been doing that well in the past few weeks, hasn't he?
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. All right, so those are our predictions for away at Montreal this weekend. I have a grab bag item. There we go. I forgot to mention this last week. I have a review for Red Bull Arena. A first-time review. I had my first poop at Red Bull Arena. I tried to avoid it. I think I planned it okay. There were not that many people at the DC game. It was a more lightly attended game, so I knew it was going to happen. I knew it was needed at some point in the first half, but I waited until about the 42nd minute or 41st minute, and I was like, okay, I'm going to beat the crowds to the restroom, and I'm not going to miss that much game time. So I went then, and then I realized it was a 1 p.m. game there, where it, like, it was still the beginning of the game. I don't think the restroom had even been used by that point, at least not the stall. So it was perfectly fine. It was great. Totally fine. I was dreading it. I usually do not like to use the restroom in that capacity in public spaces. So it was not bad, though. I'm pleasantly, I don't know if surprised is right, but it was not the fear or the dreadful experience that I thought.
Between so. Brit's Luis Robles conspiracy theories and poop stories, I could hear the unsubscribe buttons.
Honestly,
going.
It was, I actually went to the one on the south side of the stadium behind the south ward too, and even that restroom was fine. So good for you, Red Bull Arena. Not as bad as I expected. That's all I really want from this team. Not as bad as I expect. Okay, that's spoiled. This team's been very good the last 4 years. All right.
Another grab bag item. All the red seat haters should sit down because Toronto was empty for like the first half of the game.
Yeah.
With red seats, you couldn't even tell.
Yeah. Good shout. I like that.
Hey, we got an email.
Did we? Oh, yes. But it wasn't really a question, though.
No, but we could just give a shout out.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Gabe, for sending us a very nice note.
Making us feel good about ourselves.
Yeah, this is a very, very curious. We'll take you up on that offer if we're ever in Bushwick. Although we try not to be, but snobby about Bed-Stuy.
So we're sorry, Gabe.
But thank you. It was a very nice note, Gabe, in 102, I believe. But yeah, speaking of our email, you can always send us emails at contact@vfrom202.com.
What a nice segue.
They don't have to be nice. In fact, you can send very mean things. It's okay. Send us a pro rel rant. You know what? Because I feel like I miss out. Everyone talks about like horrible experiences with pro rel people, and I quite honestly have never had one. I've never been demeaned by a pro rel person on the internet. So if you have a pro rel rant that you're trying to unload on me, here, I'm curious. I'm genuinely curious. So send it to at alex.c.cello@gmail.com or contact@viewfrom202.com. We also have a Twitter @viewfrom202.
Now my email's out there for everyone.
You control this edit. You can bleep it. And then our website is viewfrom202.com. That's where all of our episodes are, as well as periodical blog posts, as well as our target points tracker, as well as our extra features, such as our entire full interviews with our guests that run over time, kind of like how The Daily Show does. So you can see us there. Otherwise,
well, basically The Daily Show, but
like the Jon Stewart Daily Show. Otherwise, we'll see you at the game, hopefully, on Saturday, if you know us. You can always introduce yourselves. If not, I don't know why you would recognize this as a radio show. But, hopefully we're talking to you after 3 points next Tuesday as well. Till then, guys.